Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to One Heat Minute Productions. I'm your host, Blake Howard. Today, I've got a very special episode with an Australian filmmaker, but not a remotely Australian topic. I'm talking to David Anthony Goh about his new flick, which he co-directed, called Never Get Busted, a doco about a, well, kind of narco bully officer turned crazy activist whose life has been irrevocably changed because he flipped from one side of the law, enforcement, to the other side of the law, which is challenging corruption and police in South of America, particularly in Texas. David, man, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me before your Australian premiere at MIFF.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, excited to talk about this crazy story.
Man, just to set the scene, because I think that some folks have maybe heard me talk about it very recently. In fact, last year, my favorite film of the year was a terrific Jeremy Saulnier film called Rebel Ridge, which is about a character who is bullied by corrupt police, who sees his assets, and then he has to go on this kind of like, I don't know, like almost non-violent or no death violent mission to reclaim his money, try and reclaim his life and take it back from these cops who have just tried to squash him out of existence. And during that press run, I got to speak to Jeremy and he was talking about civil asset forfeiture. So I found myself doing lots of Googling. And then when I came across this doco, I was just like, what kind of weird osmosis is going on in my life that this is just like, it like struck me like lightning. I've just got to know, how did you discover this guy? Were you like on YouTube when like a million years ago and you saw this and just how did it happen?
Well, the funny thing was we had seen, so my like the co-creator Aaron Williams Weir and I had seen a short interview with Barry Cooper, and he basically tells a very short version of his story, and we just couldn't believe that Matthew McConaughey or Woody Harrelson hadn't played him in some sort of narrative version. So we became quite obsessed with it. And the more we dug into it, the more we realized the story was so crazy that it just had to be a documentary. And we contacted Barry and he had like 300 hours of personal archive. So he had filmed everything. Like we had all his police dash cam footage. We had the police retaliation on him. We had his proposals. We had his breakups. There was all sorts of stuff in that archive. And from a documentary perspective, it's like pure gold. And we realized that if you did it in a narrative version as a script, which I originally started writing it as a script, nobody would believe that it was true. It's just so absurd, all the events that happen in his life. So we kind of dug in that way. Aaron did an enormous amount of research. And one of the weird serendipitous moments was we interviewed Barry. we put together like a little teaser of it, like a 3-minute teaser that was cut together, and we sent it out, and it got into the hands of two of the biggest executive producers in the doc space, John Batsik and Chris Smith. And the funny thing about when Chris watched it, we got on a call with him and he was actually incredibly annoyed because it was actually on his list of documentaries that he wanted to make. So this is the guy that had done Tiger King. He directed Fyre Festival documentary, Jim and Andy, some of the greatest documentaries of all time. And it was actually on his list of like documentaries.
I'm getting to, he didn't have Barry Cooper high enough on that priority list. I mean, look, right. I get Tiger King. Tiger King captured it, but that was the, you know, it's too strange to be true. I think this would, if people saw this, they would think it was a farce because they'd want, I don't know, they'd want to prescribe some kind of strange philosophical depth to Barry when he's going through these moments. But the way that he talks about them is just so patently ridiculous that you're just kind of like, no, this is just this guy. Like he feels everything at 100% volume and he can turn it, you know, and his nozzle goes like kind of two ways. It's like, it was so hard one way because he was so ambitious. And then the other way, the awakening was just the inverse, just flip. How do I be more about community and connectedness and stop, you know, stop this sort of, I don't know, feeling of hostility and occupation in my hometowns with these cops who just bully people for marijuana. And, you know, in Australia, marijuana is not legal as well.
That's right. Yeah, I know. It's, which is, you know, really fascinating. Part of it. And
sorry to incriminate anyone of my friends, peers. I'm like, I've seen you all smoke marijuana. It's out there. It's like, it's so harmless at this point. I mean, if Alaska has polar bears that they have to contend with, you know, like it's like if Alaska has it, they drive in the snow. It's legal there. I don't know how it can't be illegal in New South Wales or Victoria.
It's really fascinating, the mechanisms, and also why I believe that Texas has really held on to a lot of these laws pretty hard. And as you brought up the civil asset forfeiture thing, well, really all of this war on drugs is driven by money more than it's driven by anything else, including on the policing side. People don't realize that policing in Texas in particular is effectively a business. You're an entrepreneur. And one of the interesting things that we came across, we spoke to off camera an FBI agent who had investigated these police officers. Funnily enough, one of them that's in the documentary, Barry Washington, the cowboy who trained Barry and had investigated him because he was seizing millions and millions of dollars, like just pulling over people on the street and seizing their cars under like very, very dubious suspicions. And he was getting kickbacks for doing so. So the departments were giving him extra money as a police officer. So say he seizes $1 million a year, they give him tens of thousands of dollars in kickbacks. And the FBI investigated it saying, well, this is clearly corruption. It's clearly incredibly illegal and it's falsely, or it's giving a bad incentive to local street police. But they investigated and discovered, actually, it's completely legal. It's completely fine to do that in Texas. And it's completely fine for these police departments to effectively use whatever money they seize for their own department's benefit, or to, like some cases are, they bought a margarita machine or they bought like other various things based on you know, just in like citizens on the street who may or may not be able to defend themselves and their property in court.
And that's the, you know, in Australia, I'm sure you your peers, friend groups, families, like whenever there's like, in Australia, for any international listeners, I know there are lots on One Heat Media Productions, but it's like whenever there's a speed blitz, we call it double demerits. It could be a long weekend in Australia to celebrate a holiday. A policeman might pull you over. You might be doing 3 kilometers over the speed limit. Now, on a normal day, a cop's not even stopping you for that. He's like, look, maybe his speedometer's out or something like that. But on those days, you might get a speeding fine and might lose points on your license and you might have to pay a ridiculous fine. And Australians are about fairness quite a lot of the time, so we kind of like, you'll hear people get very cross and be like, this is just revenue raising, man. Like get a life, like go and do, you know, go and stop real crime, leave me alone, I was going 3 kilometers over the speed limit. But we don't, there's no incentives like that in the, I mean, in the Australian police. Maybe it's like you need to get a certain amount, but like the funding of that is not a, perhaps it's never overtly been, but it's like, it's not a revenue. Like these guys transform their town. They build a new police station. They get new cars for all of their guys. It's like, it is a really insane thing because like, why do people do stuff? Because their goals are tied into this. You know, if it's about the money. And then, like you said, it's once you are doing this in a steady stream, you make a huge bust, as Barry sort of eloquently describes. He's just like, then what you learn with the right mentors is, oh, you can just slip a couple grand off the top. That's yours, man. You know, if you get $1 million, what's 10 grand? Just take that 10 grand. It's yours. Before the formalized kickback, it's the informal kickback and the treading around legality. Like the funniest element, because I don't think it's the same in Australia, but definitely in the States, is like Barry's like, never let a policeman into your house. It's like, you can talk to me through the window. Like, I just, that just not, it would just, you know, in Oz, if a policeman knocked on your door, you would just open the door and go, oh, hello, officer, how can I help? You know, but it's just so funny that in Australia and America, I'm just watching this marveling, but I'm so familiar. And I was just wondering, when you're pairing this all together, the scale of his life, how did you hone in to give us this focus thing? Because I think like we concentrate on quite a condensed dose of time and you guys get this amazing raft of interviews. How did you convince yourself and Aaron to get some of these caricature people, real people who Barry had been describing? How did you convince them to be part of this documentary?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, Aaron had done an enormous amount of research, like yes, probably close to a year's research before we had started filming. So she had tracked everyone in every different branch of Barry's life and compiled sort of a list of who she thought were like the most like important to the story. And then we discussed together kind of how we looked at Barry's overall story and how we handpicked certain people. I call them characters, obviously they're real people, but in a story they're characters. How we picked certain characters to represent certain parts of his life.
Yes.
And to make sure that we had the wide gamut of his entire story. And it just so happens where, you know, Barry is such the kind of character that the sort of people he's involved with are characters unto themselves.
Hell yeah.
Since Adam Raposa, one of his lawyers that's involved in his cop busters sting, there's another documentary about it, Snoop Dogg. You know what I mean? Like these are the sort of people that they had. And we sort of found that most of these people were just great natural storytellers. And Aaron and I spent, well, months and months and months contacting all of them, talking to them, what I would call pre-interviewing them, sort of yeah, getting a sense of who they were, what they would be like in terms of how they told their story, their personality, and what they had to offer their story, what was their recollection. And that is such an enormous process in documentary, particularly when you film something like 25, 30 different people across the years that we were filming. And
you're also trying to penetrate to see if they're actually going to be candid. Because like some of these, as you, in Oz, we might say that guy's a character, right? And what that means is they're a raconteur, or he or her is a raconteur, or they're a raconteur. They're up for a chat, and you know they're just going to give you great stuff because it's all about that candor, that no filter. And that's what was kind of shocked me. It was not only how you guys interacted, you know, obviously Aaron doing like the lion's share of the research and you guys pre-interviewing, but it was just how candid they were. It wasn't like these captured, stolen, like nuggets of gold sometimes you see in a doco where someone has like a bit of a pause or a reflection. These people were their own documentary subjects in your doc, which I think is an amazing thing because they just were like, this is how I do it. And this is, and you're like, wow, this is kind of incriminating, but it's brilliant.
A huge part of that is just literally the trust you build before you button on, you know. Yeah. We were really clear from the start with all of our subjects that we're just objective observers. And I think that is the documentarian's like main job, is to not come in with too much of an agenda, or either politically, socially, or whatever their personal views might be, but essentially to be a person who's like, hey, you've got a really interesting story to tell. We would love to discuss that with you. But also what we found was it is very different culturally within the US than it is in Australia. You point a camera, and I found this from, I worked in reality TV way back in the day. And you point a camera at an Australian, there are two types of people. There's the people who freeze up, and then the people who do like kind of crazy, wacky
something
stuff.
Something silly. Yeah.
Something silly. Now, most of the people you actually want to interview in a documentary are, who are probably more sane, are the people who freeze up, because we're just not a culture that has a lot of like kind of cameras in our face in a way. But in America, it really is all about, you know, the Andy Warhol idea. Everyone's going to have their 15 minutes of fame. So they are prepared and ready to go. And they want to tell their story. There is a certain subjective truth that they really just kind of want to get out there. So everyone we met along the way, as soon as you would, you know, Aaron and I would, you know, driving around for weeks and weeks and weeks and meeting a lot of them in person as well. It was just like literally ask a couple of questions and let them go. Particularly, I remember, you know, later in the film, you meet Raymond Madden, whose daughter is, you know, has drugs planted on her by the police. And I remember Aaron and I just sitting there in his office and him telling that story for like 2-3 hours, pretty much uninterrupted. And we were in tears. Like, it's just like such an egregious, you know, level of corruption that went on and what he had to endure and how he had to fight back. But I remember one of the best things he said after he had told us all that just this ridiculous amount that the kind of police had done him and his daughter over. I said, when you were going through all this, like, why didn't you at some point decide to move towns, like get out of there? Like, the police are literally rocking up to your place and threatening to plant drugs on you as well, threatening you with guns, doing all of this. Why wouldn't you just leave? And he said, not in my town. And I thought, this guy is such a badass.
Yeah, that's...
He's going to personally go up against the entire Texas police force and say, hey, you know where I live? I know where you live.
Yeah.
That is spirit.
Spirit is the great word. That, and also there's a real quiet kind of determination and toughness in some of these folks that have had these really awful things, and just I want to say like endurance, because the emotional, the financial, the you know, psychological endurance to go through that kind of trauma where you're just like, you have to be this stoic, that tough guy who's like there. It's always such a marvel. It feels like they're out of time. It's pretty incredible. So I want to quickly talk about Barry. So when you have been interacting with Barry and meeting Barry, how's his response been? Because this is a guy, unlike most documentary subjects, who has, I mean, particularly his early media appearances. Your documentary took me down a rabbit hole of just Googling him on, like, as a talking head on the news. Unbelievable. If anyone wants a fun post, never get busted thing, not only Barry's videos, but just his news appearances as a talking head, especially fighting with people on Fox News, which you do show a couple of great ones in the doco, which got me down that rabbit hole. But I want to ask, like, how was he? Because this is a guy who's been filming himself and having himself filmed for decades. What was it like for him to have this synthesized, so consumable, and just, you know, for me, like, both shocking but also entertaining thing when you put it in front of him? What was Barry's response?
I mean, I remember our first conversation that Aaron and I had with Barry, and he said something to the effect of, I've been waiting for a film to be made about it. He really has. And it really took like an incredibly unique set of circumstances to create a Barry Cooper. Like, yeah. He's actually a California kid, moves to Texas, is a bit out of place within Texas, but learns the Texas ways, which were pretty tough. And then, you know, becomes a police officer, thinks he's the hero of the community, has his sort of flip against the police. And it took someone who was within the system to then be a great critic of the system as a whistleblower that really makes his journey so compelling. And there are, you know, so many facets of that. And you brought it up at the start, like, he is one of those people that's not, there's not a huge amount of philosophical conversation going on, should I do, should I do that. It's all about action. He's very much a person who just decides at a point, no, I believe this now. And he is completely full of conviction of that particular cause until he changes again, right? And it reminds me of, funnily enough, played by a person whose surname is also Cooper, but in the movie Adaptation,
yes,
where you've got this guy who's like collecting all these fish, and you know, she's like, well, why did you stop? And he's like, I went to the ocean one day, I was like, fuck fish, you know what I mean? And that is who Barry is. Dave goes, nut to hell with it all, I'm now this. And he has changed like a chameleon so many times within his life. He's lived 10 lifetimes in one, and I just have never met anyone like that before.
No, that's, I imagine him thinking about, you know, this catalog of time. And it's so funny that he says, I've been waiting for this, because that's just such a, like, that's the coolest. Of course he has. Of course he's been waiting for this. He's predestined to be one of the great characters, like real people that have ever lived. But yeah, it's a very interesting thing to like see how the weight of his impact, the positives, hugely influential, because he truly is, like he said, he was an activist, and some people sort of laughed at it at the time, but truly that he is an activist, and he has put his entire livelihood, life experience, family connections, he's lost everything to do this, and other people have gained a lot, which is immense. And to hear that he's still sort of buoyant enough to be like, of course, I've been waiting for this day for so long, it's just crazy. It's just a crazy thing.
It was such an experience that Aaron and I had along the way. I remember we first met Kathy Vaden, who was who played in Barry's church band. He was also a preacher along the way, which to me was like
drunk church.
Drunk church
is, you know what?
So
that's
good.
Something that could kick off in Australia, huge. Like if there was drunk church,
everyone would be lined up.
It'd be bigger than Hillsong. I tell you what, I was watching that. I was howling.
So he had this, like, what he referred to as an R-rated church. And, you know, him doing this, Kathy said something that really, really stuck with me. She said, there are three kinds of people in the world. There are those that love Barry Cooper, those that hate Barry Cooper, and those that have never met Barry Cooper. And that was totally our experience throughout filming it. You know, I had many people very verbally abuse me on the phone, you know, when I would reach out wanting to get comment or an interview with them. And then I had people who were just lined up ready to tell their story. And one of those people was a guy named Travis Bowles, who filmed the Never Get Busted DVDs.
Yes.
And so we've been trying to find him for a long time, but actually in the credits of Barry Cooper's Never Get Busted DVDs,
he goes under a pseudonym.
Goes under a pseudonym, C.R. Coltenthaler. So we just couldn't find this C.R. Coltenthaler. And so Aaron was really racking her brains, like, I just can't find this person. And then I got a Facebook message, and it had a YouTube link in it, and he had made his own mini documentary about his experience working with Barry that he'd cut together. He had footage from them making it together, all of these things. And he introduced it with, "Hi, Aaron and David. I believe you've been looking for me.
Oh, that's so cool.
Got a story to tell." And we were like, we found him. I can't believe that we're going to finally have this huge piece of the story, because he was the only person who was around, aside from Barry's wife at the time, Candy. He was the only person around who was on the ground involved in that. And so it was quite a hole in the story in such a crucial period of his time. And so you had people like him who was like, I've been waiting for years to tell you what happened. And it was one of the best interviews. That was definitely one where I was like, just let him go. He was so good naturally talking and giving you the sound bites that you needed. He's a filmmaker himself, so he really got what you wanted.
Look, David, I want to talk to you for a long time, but I would much rather do it once more people see this movie, because I had a complete blast. You and Aaron have done amazing stuff. Barry Cooper is truly an American original, and this story is amazing, and it still is so prescient and crazy, but it is the truth, stranger than fiction thing. I think your documentary actually opens the next gate, which is like, okay, once people are familiar with this guy and that he actually exists, then the movie about the narrative movie about the guy might actually be more believable in that, because otherwise it would just be patently ridiculous. It'd be a farce, but it is truth stranger than fiction. It's amazing. I wish that I got to see it in what I will expect and predict is going to be a riotously fun audience at MIFF. But congratulations for premiering there. Have the best time. I hope you guys get all the accolades and things, and I really can't wait. I'll make sure I try and stay in touch with the Aussie your Aussie team, just to so that I can hear when it's actually going to be released and on what platform, because I think it's something that like I'll definitely be recommending. And it's just an amazing thing, and it's still, I think, even now as we think we're becoming more developed as a society, this like civil asset forfeiture thing where you can incentivize law enforcement to basically oppress people is something where, like, whether you talk about a narrative like Rebel Ridge or you talk about this, it's something that's so rich and fascinating watching how that incentive turns people against each other. And it's just so lucky that you got a hero like Barry Cooper that was fighting this fight for so long. So congratulations on the doc to you and Aaron. Congratulations on the Oz premiere at MIFF. And I wish you guys so well. And I can't wait to get more people to see this movie, because I had an absolute blast watching it. And yeah, thank you so much for your time.
No, thanks so much for having me. It's super fun talking about these things. Man, it was cathartic.
I was just going to say, like, you know, speaking from an Aussie to an Aussie about this very deeply American thing, I was just like, you guys are the right cognitive distance. I feel that's a huge compliment. It's like the right cognitive distance away from it. And a huge shout out. I can't remember his name. Huge shout out to the guy who was wearing a New South Wales Blues jersey while, me as an Aussie.
Adam Raposa,
who is wearing, I want to shout out Adam Raposa, who was wearing a New South Wales Blues jersey. And I know that I had a unique experience as a complete rugby league tragic in Australia, that I was laughing, crying, watching a guy in the middle of a Texas fake corruption trap bust wearing a New South Wales. And I was just thinking, who is that guy? How did he get that jersey? How did that get to America? I have no idea. So many more questions, and I didn't need to know the answers. I needed to keep watching, and it's just great. Never get busted. If you're hearing this now in Oz, you know, as David, Noah, and I are talking, there'll be tickets available at MIFF, so you can try and grab them, and then we'll stay in touch, and I'll make sure I share some links when I know when people can access it more readily after your premiere. But thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you so much. And for anyone else who wants to kind of follow along and get more information, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Never Get Busted Film.
I'll make sure I share that link in the pod notes so you can go and follow along. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Blake. Appreciate it.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.